Finding Nemo was an iconic movie chock full of wisdom. The forgetful yet motivational Dory used the mantra, just keep swimming, to stay calm, get a grip and power on. Her persistence, which was key to helping find Nemo, should be such an inspiration to all of us when tackling the nonprofit component in our life. And of course, other than that persistence would be the obvious compassion, generosity, kindness. We all receive opportunities. We have clean drinking water, food, prayers. Now, this connection, this feel of being connected to something bigger, this gratitude, of course, must be reciprocated in kindness by act of giving, that high that makes people happy and changes the world and lifts feelings and moods, aspirations, and it spreads such a well-being, makes hearts soar and banishes tensions. Hello and welcome back to our listeners here at talkradio.nyc on our third edition of the Glasshouse Festival Diaries. My name is Minku Butter, and once again, I am in conversation with Yumna Hari Singh, curator of the Glasshouse Festival that is on from the 23rd to the 26th July. And I think the why of all of us here at the Art Mantram Foundation to raise funds is aligned to the why of any other donor in the world, which is compassion, generosity, humanity. So Yumna, think about the last time you gave. Maybe you gave because you were obligated by a kindness that was passed to you. Maybe you were setting a wonderful example to your children, or you just had spare change to give to a stranger for a bus ride home. If we look at a normal day as well, we all get hugs and dinners. So giving is such a hardwired into who we are. All are as human beings, and not surprisingly, so is receiving. So there is this fascinating paradox of selfless giving that I find we get so much in return. So maybe it's not actually selfless, and maybe it's part of the way our brains are wired to work well with others. Who knows?
Minku, the heart of giving is what you said, you know, connection that drives compassion. In fact, I think this is a time of universal compassion like never before, because the whole world is universally impacted by the same challenge. Empathy is resonating. For example, here at Art Mantram, we are very inspired by the British war veteran, Captain Tom Moore, who's raised more than $15 million from his garden to support coronavirus efforts. This 99-year-old World War II veteran who wanted to raise funds for NHS charities together by walking 100 laps of his 25-meter-long garden before his 100th birthday.
Incredible.
Quickly broke through his original target of £1,000. Mm-hmm. And thanks to media coverage, has now raised more than £14 million with donations from more than 64,000 people from around the world. We so appreciate the media support of Talk Radio NYC for helping us to be visible to you all. Minku, our vision at Art Mantram is the arts, using it to bring people together and connecting people for a greater cause. Across the world, the arts has suffered such a resounding blow. We have data for the US. In the US, nearly two-thirds of arts and creative workers report being unemployed. In the UK, the creative industry is reporting the loss of £1.4 billion per week. The blow in India is tremendous, with artisans and craftspeople across the country left without any safety net or fallback. So it really is up to us to tide over our less fortunate brethren during catastrophic times. Mm-hmm. So while we don't need magic to change the world, Minku, we all need to open our eyes to what is in our power to change for the better and how we act to do so. And we've brought to you the Glasshouse Poetry Festival, which is our attempt to contribute to this cause. We want to spotlight the role played by the arts to soothe, uplift, and connect us all to each other.
I resonate so much, Yumna, here, the three words you use, the soothe, the uplift, and the connect. And the way I look at it, the bigger the magnitude of the catastrophe, the bigger the challenge in getting over that roadblock, that challenge. And yet, the paradox, the solution lies in coming together through a cohesive energy of the same magnitude. Now, if I shifted a little bit to talk about the second impact that we wanted to achieve, which is in keeping with what we do, the fundraising. Now, this activity has always been such a direct interactive activity and from times immemorial, right? So all that I've been reading, the provocative online blogs, the impassioned conversations behind closed doors, and the rumblings of discontent at the pushing of outdated models of, I feel they are perhaps only partially true, at least for the time being. Now, I'll give you a wonderful example that comes to my mind. The first Monday in May is probably the most and only awaited Monday, because who likes Mondays? I mean, it's devastating having to handle a Monday after a Sunday. But on the fashion calendar, marking the opening ceremony of the annual fundraising gala for the benefit of the Metropolitan Museum of Art's Costume Institute in New York City, it has sustained itself since 1948. Let me take an example of a blue carpet Met Gala in April 2019. What a mega success that was, Yumna. And it was the talk of the town when 220 people sat in their glory to have dinner together. Now that empathy, that decoded emotions, and that appeal and motivation of the donor is so high. And it's always going to stay meaningful. And people leave such beautiful events with memories, connections, and such a sense of gratification at having contributed to a cause, right?
That's true, Minku. You know, in addition to that main donor event of ours that you talked about, the other means of fundraising that we usually do are sponsors for our events. So like usual, we had planned a veritable smorgasbord of events, from citywide cultural festivals down to, you know, our outreach to children undergoing chemotherapy. And overnight, all of these plans have been either shelved or cancelled. And what has come to the forefront is this burning issue of survival for creative folk. We completely pivoted online. Since March, we've held over 30 online events to strengthen community bonds through music events. We've accessed wonderful speakers from around the world. We've done skill-enhancing sessions through lecture demonstrations. But none of this has actually raised funds for COVID-impacted creative workers. All the causes that we have supported have been done through Art Mantram's corpus. And fundamentally, you know, that's not sustainable. And we want to magnify that impact.
And as far as corporate sponsorship is concerned, there currently is no appetite to fund virtual events. So we're really looking to donors like the ones who are listening to us now. You know, we know that when you ask from the heart for a good cause, there'll always be people who compassionately support. And that's the need of the hour driving us with our Glasshouse Festival. There are thousands of creative professionals who need help now.
Right. And I totally relate to that. And I have a suggestion here. Since this Glasshouse, it's our, you know, this poetry festival is a claim to fame, or it's, you know, a solidarity of a vision of inclusivity, inspiration, engagement. So I'm just saying that if we needed to sustain and rescale, just like the commercial sectors have different business models, and I don't see why we as charities also cannot have different business models. And I don't think fundraising on the whole is outdated. We just need to evolve. Another way that comes to my mind for fundraising efforts is to invite long-term corporate charity partnerships to build public awareness through creative advertising and executions. Now, I'll be a little wishful here, and I wish to mention how inspired I am by the innovative footsteps of campaigns such as, say, the Stonewall's Rainbow Laces, supported by their partnership with the Premier League to promote LGBT equality in football. So I am going to take this wonderful opportunity and give a shout out to all corporates who would like to synergize with us on an individual level as well. Please come and contribute to our cause. We will be happy to share the stories with you on where your donation was made possible to a COVID hero in rural India.
Minku, the nail you're hitting on the head here is the question of impact that you as a donor are making. When you can see the difference you make to someone else's life, you get that hit of gratification that's delivered immediately through your screen. That happiness trifecta of endorphins through dopamine, serotonin, and oxytocin. And this doesn't have to be a one and done deal. It's about strengthening the bonds we make and sustain as an interconnected web of consciousnesses. So, you know, hold the door open, smile at strangers, pay it all forward. I'm a very firm believer in good karma, Miko, and I know so are you.
Absolutely.
And that's why we relentlessly do what we do.
What we do.
So to circle back to your point about COVID heroes, you know, it's about putting faces and names to those who've been impacted by your giving. To know concretely that you have fed a family that was starving because the artisan or craftsman or creative person no longer has access to the market that their master skill needs, because shops and performance halls are closed, because routes to market have been locked down, because audiences can't congregate and there's no other way of accessing help, because no one exists to help and you reached out. That is a powerful way of saving lives in this very difficult time.
Yes, and that's strong and rooted in its essence and mission as it can be, Yumna. And I feel it so deep in my heart. Now, the one thing that has been real positive amidst all this bleakness has been this online sense of community that's been created and nurtured in the absence of being able to come together in person. Now, 12 years ago, people said Facebook was a fad. Today, it's the biggest driver of supporter growth at Greenpeace UK. Nobody could have predicted that. So I'm very skeptical about looking too far in the future. But yes, to stay cognizant, absolutely. And live in a world where inclusivity is concerned and keep up to the changes. Now, that's, of course, very important.
You know, Miko, change is coming to us all. In the current scenario, it's really pouring down on all of our heads. And it's true that models are changing. COVID alone is such a dimension shift in how artisans and creative people are adapting to the times. But the truth, Minku, is that if this current COVID reality is the reality for the foreseeable future, there's a huge knock-on impact on entire sections of society's livelihoods and resources. Craftsmen and artisans are adaptable, but without support, you know, invaluable skills will be lost. Within the current context, individuals and companies have really reached out. They've emptied their pockets. And the truth of the matter is that while we can see who needs the help in the front, there are a lot of ancillary artisans and supporting creative people who also need to continue to survive. And as I mentioned before, you know, Glasshouse Festival is trying to bridge that gap. We've had wonderful poets, writers, academics are all coming together in the hope that this event, that this outpouring of connection will reach you and move you to reach back. We hope you'll be a part of us and a part of this better future as we move forward from these dark times.
Talking about the dark times, Yumna, I am going to stay hopeful. And altruism wins hands down. Compassion always opens doors, always. In fact, the latest surveys show that most donors plan to maintain or even increase the amount they donate to charity this year. And 54% plan to maintain their giving levels. The younger generations plan to step up their donations in greater numbers. 46%, from what I understood, 46% of millennials say that they will give more in response to the pandemic compared to the 14% of baby boomers and 25% of the Gen X. So I just have to say this, that with this awareness and agility, I invite all of you listeners in our journey of empathy, compassion, gratitude, and the spirit of giving to a shifting fundraising landscape. Our website, artmantram.org, has all the information on how to become a contributor. We need you. At this stage, please join me to say bye to Yumna. Till next Wednesday, same time here on talkradio.nyc with yet another soulful conversation. So bye for now, Yumna.
Bye, Minku. Pleasure as always.
To our listeners, stay tuned. We have coming on right after the break, Jija Hari Singh and Antra Bhargava talking about Art Mantram, our trust and fundraising interpretations apt for us. For now, a commercial break.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Do you run run or are ready to open your own business? Hi, I'm Jeremiah Fox. I've been operating and opening small business for the last 25 years, and I'm the host of the new show, The Entrepreneurial Web. Tune in every Friday at noon Eastern Time for insights and stories on the nuances of running small business right here on Fridays at noon, talkradio.nyc.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant, and on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
Talking Alternative Radio, 24 hours a day.
Bhargav in conversation with Dr. Jija Hari Singh, both founder managing trustees of charitable trusts out of Bangalore, talking about how to build an art and cultural scene in Bangalore. Listen to the experts and learn more about the Glasshouse Poetry Festival 2020. So Jija, we'd love to hear from you. What's the vision behind Art Mantram? How did you go about creating this fabulous ecosystem in Bangalore? And really, what are your thoughts on promoting art and culture as a charitable trust?
Thanks, Sandra. As you said, Art Mantram is a charitable trust. Our vision is based on the strong belief that art is innate in everyone. Therefore, the vision is to make art a part of everyday life of everyone. We promote the arts, artists, and awareness. We create multifarious events and festivals on art and culture, consciously acting as a bridge between artists and patrons of art. Because Antra, all art needs a lot of dedication to the muse, as well as patronage and philanthropy. These are vital to the flourishing of art. If you look back, we can see that kings and clergy, chieftains and merchants patronized both visual and performing arts. Look at Paris, Rome, and New York, centers of culture. Patronage was huge. In India, Maharajas of Mysore, Baroda, Rajasthan, the Mughal emperors like Shah Jahan, who built Taj Mahal, also patronized paintings and sculptures. Look at all the exquisitely carved temples, the evolved classical music and dance. This is true of either Indian or Western. They all came up and flourished, basking in the glory of patronage. Buddhist monks spent all their lives in contemplation and devoted themselves to making world-famous murals of the temples of Ladakh, Ajanta, or Ellora. As a matter of fact, if you look at it, Art Mantram was also born out of compassion and empathy. Kargil War happened in 1999. A mere civil servant and an artist, I sold all my paintings to muster and donate over a quarter of a million rupees to the young war widows. Quite a large sum for any ordinary mortal. From then on, it has evolved into the significant player it is today in promoting art and artists as well as supporting causes. We function through event sponsorships from like-minded people who are inspired by the work we do, and also occasional sales of art. We continuously support causes like autism, the education of the challenged, the underprivileged, and the girl child. We work for livelihood for women, succor for those afflicted with calamities, disasters, insurgency, and now the pandemic. If you ask me, our dedication to these twin aims of supporting art as well as the burning issues all around inspires people to support us. It keeps us motivated and steadily flourishing by the year. It happened these past two decades.
So, Jija, as you're aware, we are in an unprecedented global crisis caused by the COVID-19 pandemic. We have seen significant fallout of this pandemic on the healthcare aspects, on the economic fallout throughout the globe. But what has been the impact of this pandemic on the art and cultural scene in Bangalore? Could you guide us, please?
Yes, Sandra. This pandemic has brought in its wake untold misery all over the world, both COVID-19 and the lockdown. As we all know, it's a very complex situation, from the plight of migrant labor and daily wage workers, fear of job losses and reduced income, insufficient hospital beds and ventilators, lost opportunity costs of graduating students, to the economic stress of small and big businesses and industries. But what was unseen and horrific was the plight of artists, painters, sculptors, those in dance, music, theater, small-time teachers, weavers, and craftsmen. Suddenly deprived of all income and thrown in at the deep end, we realized that some people had to be brought back from the edge. Mental disease, even thoughts of suicide. Art Mantram, of course, helped people with essential rations of foodstuff and temporary livelihood support to artists and artisans. In fact, the idea of the poetry festival itself was born out of this feeling of helplessness and stress. It is in response to the physical isolation that we are all experiencing and the suffering that we are witnessing that Art Mantram Trust wanted to reach out and create a gathering of poets and those who love poetry. Coming together like this to provide a community of solace, beauty and understanding. Our dates are 23rd to 26th of July, with all sessions held online. We seek to gather together in celebration of the power of poetry to understand, to succor, to soothe, and above all, to see ourselves and recognize grace, mystery and rationality in the world. Poets from around the world are invited to participate from their homes alongside academics, writers, and musicians. The program includes recitative poetry, slam poetry, close readings of poems, poems in translation, regional language poetry, poems on the environment, poems of protest, resistance, and empowerment, panel discussions, workshops, and performances and allied arts. We thought this was a very good way, perhaps, to pay tribute to those working to mitigate the pandemic, as well as to raise awareness and resources to continue to support the afflicted.
That's incredible, Jija. So what you're saying is that the Glass House Poetry Festival was conceptualized to pay tribute to the healthcare workers on one hand, but also that the use of funds has been demarcated to support the struggling artist community in Bangalore. That's fabulous. I mean, have you heard of other such initiatives being successful around the world? What is your inspiration here, and what's the kind of impact that Art Mantram is looking to make with this festival?
Yes, Sandra. The world of art and their patrons have risen superbly each time to respond to any crisis. Generosity and compassion are very much alive. From Lady Gaga's online concert to the Notre Dame fire and thereafter. In the latter case, I believe the budget for repair is estimated at approximately $600 million, but the pledges have exceeded over $1 billion. Similarly, the Art Mantram Trust has set up the Glass House Festival to provide critical relief in our own area, and we do need resources. We are hopeful of a genuine crowdfunding kind of a response all around. We have a framework to receive donations. We'll welcome you to visit our website artmantram.org and our social media handles to know more about us.
So that was Dr. Jija Hari Singh. Thank you so much, Jija, for talking to us and for enlightening us about the Glasshouse Festival and the method behind the madness in trying to keep the art and cultural scene in Bangalore alive. Stay safe, stay healthy, and the very best wishes to the Glasshouse Poetry Festival 2020.
Now we have Aditi Angiras, a poet who is part of our curatorial team for the Glasshouse Festival 2020. Here is Aditi now.
The moon did not become the sun. It just fell on the desert in great sheets, reams of silver handmade by you. The night is your cottage industry now. The day is your brisk emporium. The world is full of paper. Write to me. This was Stationery by Aga Shahid Ali. And hi, I am Aditi Angiris, a poet and an artist based out of New Delhi. I am the founder of Bring Back the Poets, a queer collective of poets and performers from South Asia. And I'm also the co-editor of The World That Belongs to Us, an anthology of queer poetry from South Asia that's just come out this June from HarperCollins India. I am really glad to be a part of the Glasshouse Poetry Festival as a member of the curatorial team. And I feel that this festival is a lot more interesting and a lot more, and will be a lot more inspiring, because it is coming at a time where so much is going on, where so many of us are hurting and dealing with things in so many different ways. And we hope that the voices of all the poets from around the world will help ease some. The festival goes on between 23rd to 26th July with various sessions and workshops, panels and poetry spread across the days. And I am particularly excited about two sessions that I'm personally invested in and curious about. They're also very closely related to the kind of work that I do. One is about queerness and the politics of poetry, where I'm going to be in conversation with Mriga Sethi, who is also moderating this discussion. The other is a spoken word session, which is going to bring you some of the most brilliant spoken word artists from Malaysia, Australia, India, and beyond. So here's me inviting you to the festival, and I look forward to you tuning in.
What wonderful poetry. After this, we will have Yumna Hari Singh in conversation with Dr. Smita Premchandr. But for now, a commercial break.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network at www.talkingalternative.com. Now, broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Talking Alternative.
Do you run or are ready to open your own business? Hi, I'm Jeremiah Fox. I've been operating and opening small business for the last 25 years, and I'm the host of the new show, The Entrepreneurial Web. Tune in every Friday at noon Eastern Time for insights and stories on the nuances of running small business right here on Fridays at noon, talkradio.nyc.
Do you love or are you intrigued about New York City and its neighborhoods? I'm Jeff Goodman, host of Rediscovering New York, a weekly show that showcases New York's history and its extraordinary neighborhoods. Every Tuesday live at 7 p.m., we focus on a particular neighborhood and explore its history, its vibe, its feel, and its energy. Tune in live every Tuesday at 7 p.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Hi, I'm Graham Dobbin. Join me every Thursday evening for The Mind Behind Leadership here on talkradio.nyc. We speak to people from business, sport, military and politics, all around what makes a great leader. The personal experiences of what's worked and, maybe more importantly, what hasn't worked. So, that's 7 o'clock. every Thursday evening, the Mind Behind Leadership here on talkradio.nyc. Listen to real stories of real leaders.
Talking Alternative Radio, 24 hours a day.
Thank you, Smita, for joining me, founding trustee of Art Mantram Trust, which has been working for over 20 years, bringing people, the arts and causes together to better society and enrich our souls. I have with me today Smita Premchander, who is a dear friend, but she's also founder and director of a 29-year-old accredited NGO, Sampark. She's adjunct professor at the Indian Institute of Management in Ahmedabad and is a development professional who evaluates UN programs and is a chairperson of the International Advisory Committee of the United Nations University's Institute of Environment and Human Security based in Bonn. Welcome, Smita.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us. As you know, we're doing the Glasshouse Festival, which is trying to bring poets together at this time and at the same time raise awareness and funds for COVID-affected artisans and craftspeople. At this moment, we have done things on our own, but we're looking forward to our partnership with you, which is to build a new vertical around funding for those in need who come from the creative professions. Thank you for that.
Thank you, Yumna, because I really feel that Sampark reaches migrants and children and women, but we do not have currently any way of reaching artists and craftspeople. And so this is a very valuable partnership for Sampark because we know how much COVID has affected artists. And so with this technical partnership with the Art Mantram, Sampark would be very happy to reach them, actually.
I really hope it's going to be one of those win-win partnerships that we look back upon with great pride. So I have a few questions for you, Smita. This is within the context of our show that we're doing with Talk Radio NYC, which is on fundraising and what methods are outdated, what are currently working, and what changes can we see going into the future. So you've had Sampark up and running for 29 years now. How has the fundraising model changed from the past to today?
So when Sampark was formed in 1991, there were different sources of funding. Like there was a concept of development finance institutions. So if you wanted to do economic empowerment of people, you wanted to bring them out of poverty, there were financial institutions in India like NABARD. That time there was no SIDBI, but Industrial Development Bank of India used to give funds. That was important. At that time also, government was beginning to increase its funding to NGOs. So government NGO partnerships were quite, they used to give a lot of funds. And then there were foundations. So organizations like Tata's, of course, grew much, much more later. But at that time also, organizations like Ford Foundation used to be very, very important. And so there was a lot of donor funding. Foreign donors were very important funders. So DFID, the UK government's funding, Australian funding, Canadian government funding, all these government fundings were very important. As things progressed and India started becoming more, and started being looked at not as a underdeveloped, but as a developing country, then later on more as a middle income country, what happened was that some of these foreign donors also started receding a little. Also, Indian government started telling the small donors that they really have no place here. So some small donors, small foreign donors, they merged together. Some of them wound up their offices and went. And further, if you come in the earlier, later period, like 2004 onwards and so on, even the post-colonial guilt that used to drive some of these government, foreign government funding also eroded. So I think now even, DFID's funding, for instance, is reducing, or Canadian CEDA is reducing, and France is beginning to fund Africa, African countries much less. Yeah, and they're coming back and funding more people in their own country and so on. So a lot of things have changed over the years.
Okay, so I would like to then ask you, what is the model that's working today? Who are you approaching if all of these governmental agencies have receded? Who's coming to the forefront?
Yeah, so the role that has the space of government funding has been taken over a little more by big corporate foundations. Mm-hmm. Bill and Melinda Gates, or you have in India, you have the Tatas, of course, and then you have the Wipro CMG Foundation. It's one of the biggest. And really, it provides funding to a whole range of development agendas. So you have a lot of Indian funding coming up. And then there has been online platforms. So what has happened with online platforms is individuals, professionals, as people grow, as the whole society grows upwards, people who are going from middle class towards the upper middle class, and especially young professionals with two incomes, they decide that they're going to share. So a lot of, when you see a whole society move upwards, a lot of people feel that they are now able to give. Now professionals start giving, and online platforms have developed, which has enabled not only institution funding to come out, right, but actually individual funding to come out. Platforms like Ketto, platforms like Give India, platforms like Global Giving internationally, Benevity, which is international. So both at national and international levels, we find these kind of, they're in some ways fund aggregators.
And they're reaching individual givers.
They are reaching individual givers, they are reaching foundations. Many of them are reaching corporates also, because, for instance, an example is Apple. And what they do is that if an employee of Apple wants to fund an NGO, then they do the due diligence. And once that is done, then Apple meets the fund of the employee by 1-2.
Yes. Okay.
Mine, like, she gave $7,000 and we got 21.
Right.
So corporates are also beginning to trust their employees and say, okay, if this person has found some NGO doing good work, we will, just join that rather than do our own due diligence.
Fantastic. Smita, the last one that I want to come to is, this is something else we have together, the challenges that we've run. You took on the 21-day challenge, which is run by our college association, where you decided you would try and raise a lakh and a half a day for the organization during the first lockdown, which is 21 days, and you blew that target out of the water. So tell me, other than the fact that there was that synchronicity between the work you're doing and the cause that was in front of everybody else, what was the other factor that enabled this outstanding success?
Okay, so I think we managed to raise something like $270,000 for COVID-19 relief. And there is only one formula to be used, which is trust and relationships. Because what happens in this kind of pandemic, it was so unprecedented. Everyone wanted to help. At that time, they were looking for people who they knew would reach the last mile person. They knew would spend the money the way it was intended to be spent. So Sampark, I think we reached about 28,000 people with dry ration kits, with the cooked food, with hygiene kits, with the health support. And with all this was only possible because we were the link between the people who need, and we knew exactly what they needed, and we knew when migrants were leaving or when they were returning and what's the support they needed with the people who wanted to give. So you have a good connection and you have trust.
Thank you. Thank you, Smita. I think really it does come down to relationships and trust. And I think that's the key difference between going after institutional funding and going after sort of individuals and reaching that compassion. Thank you so much for spending this time with me.
Thank you. And we hope to help many more artists. We hope to reach them through Artmantra. Thank you, Yuvna.
Yes, for anybody listening to this and wanting to give, if you want to support artists, a lot of them have had their livelihoods that have been very badly impacted by COVID, because as you know, we still can't congregate in large groups. So anybody who has been touched by the arts and would like to support people in dire need, do come and approach us on artmantram.org. We have created a fund, if you're donating from any place outside of India, that is in conjunction with Smita and Sampark, that will ensure that we reach the last mile with the creative people who need your help. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
I would like to introduce Priyanka Mohan, who's a poet and an author in her own rights. Here's Riyanka.
Let me tell you a ghost story, he said. It begins and ends with death, and every word is true. We huddled close, makeshift beds on the floor, 9 kids of assorted ages as the night stilled itself to hear him speak. The lights were out, our parents asleep in shuttered rooms, far from where we lay in the drafty hall. It happened in this house a long, long time ago. The summer air felt itself being strangled by the spirits of our ancestral home, summoned by my cousin. Ghosts in the rafters, roused by memory, descend with the faces of the unsmiling dead in the portraits on the walls who watch us, the sentinels of secrets. A shiver ran through me, a gloom rose, and on the edge of terror I sat wordless while around our circle the dread marshaled itself. It began with an elephant's tearful lament one night, then a solitary knock on the front door of our house, alone in the middle of unguarded fields. The village slept early, a guest after dinner rare. My puzzled aunt stood up, about to open the door. Amachi, my great-grandmother, stayed her, while she shouted, in uncharacteristic inhospitality, "What is wanted?" Not who, mind, but what. The knock repeated itself. She repeated her question. A third knock rang out. It was my uncle who erred. Impatiently, he muttered, "Enter." The door burst open with a gust of wind. No one there to be received by the frozen hosts, my great-grandmother, her shivering maid, my frowning uncle, and my shocked aunt holding my baby cousin. Yet someone had entered the house, breaking the stranded silence. The baby started to wail. None slept that night, a vigil kept, candles lit, prayers whispered, while things shook and windows banged of their own accord. The milkman told the maid the next morning that the elephant herder at the temple had died in the night, shortly before the knock on the door. He still lives here, you know, if you can call it living, in this house. Thus ended my cousin. Silence fell like a shroud, broken only by the abrupt din of a window banging shut. I burst out crying, I remember, a punctured heart in my mouth. A girl cousin, 2 years older, consoled me while the others shushed. "You'll get us all in trouble, crybaby." Years later, she told me that it had been arranged with string. Years after, her mother died, followed by mine. Their photographs joined the others on the walls. Sisters of the old house separated from the living, and I burned for an evening when the dead could be restored by the telling of a ghost story. 3 knocks are all it takes to fill an empty soul. Thank you.
Paresh Tiwari, a naval officer by profession, a creative writer, and an illustrator by choice. He is known for his hybern and hybrid poems. Here's Paresh.
Hello, everyone. This is Paresh Tiwari, a poet, writer, illustrator, and editor, currently based out of Hyderabad. I've published 2 collections of poetry, An Inch of Sky and Raindrops Chasing Raindrops. I have also co-edited the Red River Book of Hybern in the year 2019. I've been attempting for long now to dismantle the barriers that keep various forms of literature, especially the genres of poetry, from sharing the same space. I'm delighted to be associated with the Glasshouse Festival hosted by Art Mantram, especially because they have opened their doors to the Japanese short-form poetry in a huge way. I'm excited to be judging the Weighing Raindrops Haiku Contest, brought to you in association with the Narrow Road Literary Journal. Here's a hybern of mine titled How to Kill a Poet. How to Kill a Poet, after Arun Kolatkar. One bullet in the head will never be enough. You should start with the forest in my beard, cut down the trees. Their roots have taken hold of my bones. Dig through the mountain on my back. Sometimes travelers climb its peak in search of meaning. Lasso the clouds, pull them down. They're known to be reckless. Chain the rivers till they dry up to a drop. What about the sanctuary in my chest? Snap the wings of the birds that dare. Their songs carry over the barbed wires. Slit the deer's throat. Hunt the wolves. There's a sword for every lion in your armory. Forests often grow back from single seed. Pour salt onto my skin. Make sure my soil remains barren for centuries to come. Cross-stitch my lips. I need to learn how to bear the weight of silence. Crush my fingers. Break open the skull of my pen. Tear up the poems that breathe, those that love and heal, and those that raise their voices. And if all else fails? If all else fails, stab me in the womb, scrape out my flesh, and burn it at the stake. Thank you. Do enjoy your time at the Glasshouse Poetry Festival. I'm sure it's going to be a spectacle worth your time.
Talking Alternative Radio, 24 hours a day.
Are you a curious person, always asking questions? Do you desire to be in the know? Then join me, Antonia, host of So Now You Know, Thursdays at 5 p.m. at talkradio.nyc. Listen in as I attempt to satisfy that curiosity. I will be talking with amazing everyday people. Join the fun. So Now You Know on Thursdays at 5 p.m. at talkradio.nyc.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant, and on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
TalkingAlternative.com.
Welcome back. You are listening about the Glass House Poetry Festival on talkradio.nyc. After those profound stories, coming up right now is Kavita Mehra in conversation with Anita Reddy, the founder of not-for-profit and artisan-owned society Dwarka Plus. This is one inspiring story you just have to hear. Right on its heels is a conversation of Ramkrishna of Rangde and Alina Ibrahim. Stay tuned.
Hi, everyone. Let me introduce Padma Shri Anita Reddy, an Indian social worker and the founder of the Association for Voluntary Action and Services, AVAS. Known for her services for the rehabilitation and upliftment of the slum dwellers in the Indian states of Karnataka and Andhra Pradesh. She is the managing trustee of Dwarka and Drick Foundation, working for children's education and women's livelihoods. The tree of service nurtured by Anita with a commitment that grew stronger by the day, developed deep roots while its branches reach for the sky. Your rich grassroots level experience began to be sought at by the policy makers, and you also represented us at the United Nations Conference on Human Settlement at Istanbul, Turkey. Let us hear Anita's views and her journey. Anita, you are renowned for philanthropy and fundraising, also known to have been mobilizing resources to support over 500 artisans' families' livelihood in Dwarka. You were greatly inspired and influenced by your father. Please share your thoughts with us.
Hello, friends. I've been asked to share about my thoughts about philanthropy and fundraising. I share my thoughts. Philanthropy to me was a two-sided coin always. One side is where you give of yourself. The other is, of course, what kind of funds can one raise to support and help communities reinvigorate themselves socioeconomically. And my own experiences in Dwarka in bringing up women artisans who did fabulous hand painting kalamkari art, was to say that when I met them, they were in the clutches of moneylenders, debt and poverty. But the support of one individual, one person who gave of himself and of his money earned from building up an industry, coming from a very simple rural background, hard work helped him develop the confectionery industry in India to the number one status called Nutrin. And with every candy he sold, he told us, his children, that this wealth rightly belonged to the people of the nation too, to the women and children and youth, which meant that we give it back in manifold times to the communities when the time comes. So a point of time when he decided that all of his personal wealth and not corporate social responsibility would belong to charities, it came with a feeling of right and justice. It came with a feeling of change and transformation. That kind of money that's given in philanthropy goes beyond just charity, but to really kind of make a impactful change. And that is what we set about doing. That was our experience, where we could communities and women especially, that if we learn to fish for a lifetime, we eat for a lifetime. So we learn to catch fish, and we don't just take fish in a day and finish it and then again go looking for a dole. And that's what we did in Dwarka. And it's with this thought, I believe, that there are ways in which, when the work itself speaks for a genuinity and a sincerity, that money comes in. And there is, of course, a systemic budget that is also there for the poor. We have learned to utilize and tap into that. Those are the monies that the governments create budgets with to support the poor. And be it housing, be it relief, be it economic rejuvenation, we feel that we must tap into what is rightfully, again, belonging to communities and the poor in the budgetary allocations. So that's another way of fundraising, that people understand it's there as their right. And the corporate social responsibility has not been a way that I have really tapped into, but it is definitely a way under law today that it should be done in a manner in which that people recognize the potential at grassroots and not really search for their own thoughts of change, but allow it to evolve and come out from the communities to whom they want to give. And this is what I've learned from my father's very genuine giving to people. And ultimately, I feel that when I talk about the COVID relief times, there have been any number of donors who have come up, but that's small-time relief compared to what we felt. We used that to give the survival packages. Survival packages included anything that will help them overcome the immediate crisis of not having food, hunger, even some amount of health care, etc. in the communities. But we have been focusing on the revival packages, and the revival packages are where we are able to invest with the people again to start making them work, rejuvenating their livelihoods now. And that is the way we have been believing, that once you put a rupee or a dollar into a cause, we must make sure that it multiplies so many more times. And I feel nice that I can share this small experiences that we have had in being able to impact people, regardless of how much funds were raised or not. Because when you give of yourself, you really give what people richly deserve. Thank you so much, Art Mantram, for giving this opportunity, and all the best for the future programs. Thank you.
Thank you for sharing your experiences with us, which has impacted lives of so many.
Here is Ramkrishna N.K., CEO of Rangday, a micro-lending organization helping thousands of poverty-stricken artisans, weavers and farmers to track change and survive. He is an Ashoka scholar who was inspired by Nobel laureate Muhammad Yunus of Grameen Bank and micro-lending fame. You are doing such amazing work and have been in the news. Please share your story with us.
Yeah, so, you know, peer-to-peer lending is all about, you know, people, one person lending to the other person. What we do, been doing at Rangday for many years now, is leveraging the peer-to-peer model to provide affordable credit to low-income communities across the country. In response to the pandemic, what we've really done is provide interest-free loans to farmers, to small and marginal farmers, to artisans, to entrepreneurs across the country. So what we really, as I said, you know, we're providing interest-free credit and also helping them access not just credit, but other channels such as market access with the help of our partners. It's clearly a very tough challenge given the situation we are all in. What we're really doing is trying to create a dialogue and get people's attention towards the situation on the ground. To that extent, we've been very fortunate to have some amazing media partnerships in place. More recently, we did a partnership with NDTV, and it helped us garner close to $1 million in support towards interest-free loans for small and marginal farmers. The whole thought process is, can we help, you know, bridge the empathy gap? You know, because many of us, you know, we are very privileged. Because we're not affected by this pandemic. We don't have to step out of our homes. But many of us would want to do something about the crisis. And the issue really is, how do we get the message across? Because the people whom we want to serve and support, unfortunately, they are not on social media. And there is no way, you know, we will get to hear their current situation. So the idea is to really, you know, through digital channels, could we, for instance, could we organize a Zoom or a, you know, webinar with the communities and understand, you know, firsthand what the situation is? So we'll have to, you know, get as innovative as we can and try and see how we can leverage digital channels to bridge the empathy gap. And if we can do that successfully, our belief is that, you know, we might be able to not just garner financial resources, but we might be able to also leverage their expertise to help them access markets or access skills. I think the way we go about doing this is through partner organizations. So we work with credible community organizations, and with their support and help, we access the FPOs in the case of farmers, and in the case of artisans, producer companies. And through them, we are able to reach out to the individual farmer or artisan or the entrepreneur.
Really appreciate, and thank you for coming here online, and thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Elena. Thank you.
Well, thank you everyone out there after those impressive lineups. I especially want to thank Anish Vidyashankar, our amazing walking violinist, who has brought to you the mesmerizing music specially created for the Glasshouse Festival and these programs, and all our contributors working silently in the background. Big shout out to Sam Leibowitz again for being our media partner, rooted in generosity. We will be back next week, same day, same time. Thank you all for being such amazing listeners. Stay safe. This is Minku Butter signing off for today. With love.
Talking Alternative Radio, 24 hours a day.
Do you run or are ready to open your own business? Hi, I'm Jeremiah Fox. I've been operating and opening small business for the last 25 years, and I'm the host of the new show, The Entrepreneurial Web. Tune in every Friday at noon Eastern Time for insights and stories on the nuances of running small business right here on Fridays at noon, talkradio.nyc.
Hi, I'm Graham Dobbin. Join me every Thursday evening for The Mind Behind Leadership here on talkradio.nyc. We speak to people from business, sport, military and politics, all around what makes a great leader. the personal experiences of what's worked and, maybe more importantly, what hasn't worked. So, that's 7 o'clock every Thursday evening, the Mind Behind Leadership here on talkradio.nyc. Listen to real stories of real leaders.
Hey, all you crazy listeners. Looking to boost your business? Why not advertise on Talking Alternative with very reasonable rates? Interested? Simply email at info@talkingalternative.com.
Are you a curious person, always asking questions? Do you desire to be in the know? Then join me, Antonia, host of So Now You Know, Thursdays at 5 p.m. at talkradio.nyc. Listen in as I attempt to satisfy that curiosity. I will be talking with amazing everyday people. Join the fun. So Now You Know on Thursdays at 5 p.m. at talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network at www.talkingalternative.com. Now, broadcasting 24 hours a day. Talking Alternative.
Do you love or are you intrigued about New York City and its neighborhoods? I'm Jeff Goodman, host of Rediscovering New York, a weekly show that showcases New York's history and its extraordinary neighborhoods. Every Tuesday live at 7 p.m., we focus on a particular neighborhood and explore its history, its vibe, its feel, and its energy. Tune in live every Tuesday at 7 p.m. on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.